role of perceived need and health insurance in substance abuse treatment, implications for the Affordable Care Act.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. So I am with the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. We are a relatively new Center for Behavioral Health Statistics and Quality. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Judith Teich and Ryan Mutter. Judith Teich could not be with us today, but Ryan Mutter is in the audience. So if you have any difficult questions or find any mistakes, he is the person to go to. So I'm glad that he's here. What are we doing? But before that, just a little disclaimer. This represents our views. It does not represent SAMHSA or HHS in any way. So what we sort of try to do here is sort of ask a question that, you know, given the recent health reforms, you know, we know the ACA was implemented, we had the parity laws, and, you know, it's a series of accumulation of laws that have sort of transformed behavioral health services quite significantly. So, you know, as we all know, behavioral health services are now considered part of the 10 essential health benefits. So providers do have to cover them. So we wanted to ask that now, given that people would have access to substance abuse services, quote unquote, you know, their insurance will cover them, would that translate into increases in utilization of substance abuse treatment services? Within that, we want to look into what kind of services do individuals with a substance use disorder, and I'll sort of explain what I mean by substance use disorder when we talk about the data. So we want to look into, you know, what kind of services do these individuals with substance use disorder would use. And we also want to examine the role of perceived need for treatment, and I'll sort of explain that a little bit when I talk about the data on what we exactly mean by perceived need for treatment. So we want to examine these questions here. You know, as I was sort of saying, you know, all these provisions, all these great, you know, great things that have happened policy-wise, does that translate into utilization? And we sort of asked this question because compared to the rate of individual who has substance use disorder, substance use treatment has been quite low. And, you know, that's sort of pretty well documented in the literature. And, you know, the literature also documents how individuals with substance use disorder are more likely to seek mental health treatment. So this is an interesting line of research that has been going on. But I would sort of like to point out that, you know, when they were sort of looking into mental health services utilization among those with substance use disorder, it could include individuals who has a comorbid mental health condition. And also, you know, not much, but, you know, sort of this idea of that individuals with substance use treatment do not feel that their substance use is a problem, so they have a low perceived need for treatment. And in fact, one of the studies that was sort of, so all of these sort of raises this question of, you know, how do you get people to increase their utilization of services? So one recent paper that was published in the Health Affairs sort of documented how when the Massachusetts had its health reform, how that sort of did not really change utilization of substance abuse treatment among those with substance use disorder. So what are we using in this study? So we're using the National Survey of Drug Use and Health. It's a SAMHSA data set that has been going on for a long time. It's cross-sectional, and it's mostly, you know, the non-institutionalized population. So, you know, you would have information from people on the households, you know, in college dorms, if someone is homeless but in a shelter, you know, civilians in military bases. It would exclude, you know, active military personnel, people in long-term hospitals, prison population, homeless not in shelter. So this is a great data set. I just want to put a plug for that. You know, it's awesome. It can provide national level estimates, states, and also sub-state estimates. But, you know, SAMHSA website has a lot of documentation on what to use to get into that substance abuse, sub-state level estimates. And it's great for identifying individuals with substance use disorder, mental health issues, tons of questions on substance use treatment, interesting questions on insurance, lots and lots of great features. So if you haven't explored it, I encourage you to sort of take a look at the data set. So we are using data from the 2008 and 2012 NISDA survey. And what we wanted to do here, we wanted to focus on the 18 to 64-year-olds because the ACA's main concentration is on the 18 to 64-year-olds. So we said, all right, fine, we're going to focus on these adults with substance use disorder. So how substance use disorder is sort of defined in the NISDA is that NISDA has a series of questions that are usually used, if you sort of think about the DSM-IV criteria. So these are the same exact questions that are sort of asked, and with that we can sort of identify individuals who would have a substance use disorder. And by substance use disorder here, we mean anybody with an alcohol use or a drug use disorder. So we wanted to get individuals with substance use disorder, but no AMI. So AMI is any mental illness, and any mental illness also in the NISDA is sort of based on the DSM-IV criteria. So the purpose here was, like if you sort of recall in a couple of slides ago, we sort of talked about this literature which sort of talks about individuals with SUD getting mental health treatment instead of substance use disorder treatment. So we said, look, we are going to pick a population with those who have SUD, but we want to exclude everybody who has any mental illness. And any mental illness is the most comprehensive measure of mental illness that we have in the NISDA. So the NISDA have other measures, major depressive episodes, serious psychological distress. So we have all of this serious mental illness, but we wanted to get rid of as many people as possible from our sample. And the reason is we wanted to take a very, very conservative approach and see that, you know what, is there any way for us to disprove our hypothesis? So we wanted to sort of take a very, very conservative approach here. So we get rid of a whole bunch of people and we end up with about 18,700 individual. So this is unadjusted pooled sample. So if we sort of pull this out, in the weighted, it sort of represents about 5 million individuals. So we're still sort of looking at a significant chunk of the population. So we are looking into a treatment-seeking category. So it's a categorical variable, mutually exclusive categorical variable. So we look into whether the individual with an SUD but no AMI, are they getting any substance abuse treatment? And by any substance abuse treatment, we mean treatment at an outpatient or an inpatient setting, treatment at an ER, or seeing a private physician. So once again, we wanted to take a very, very comprehensive measure of substance abuse treatment. Mental health treatment, once again, same thing, outpatient, inpatient, private physician's office, ER, or you're taking some sort of medications. So you could have individuals taking, getting substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment, and these are mutually exclusive, so only. So you could have individuals having both a mental illness and substance abuse treatment, or you could have individuals with an SUD but no MI, but they don't get any treatment at all, neither substance abuse treatment nor mental health treatment. So that's our that's our dependent variable. So our main independent variable is an interaction term between perceived need for substance abuse treatment and health insurance. So what we mean by substance abuse treatment is that in the NISDA, individuals are asked if they feel that their drug use or alcohol use is problematic and do they feel that they need to get treatment for that. We sort of take that question as perceived need for treatment. Other studies have sort of used it, so it's a fairly widely used measure. NISDA has been collecting this information for a long time. So what we do is we take this perceived need for substance abuse treatment and we interact with the individual's insurance category. So the idea here is we want to tease out whether conditional on your insurance, whether you have a need for treatment or do not have a need for treatment, how does that impact your utilization rate of services? And if you do go get services, what sort of services are you going to utilize? Are you going to utilize substance abuse treatment? Or are you going to utilize mental health treatment? Are you going to utilize both or none? So with that, we estimate a multinomial logistic regression model, categorical variable with two or more unordered categories. So we're sort of we're estimating relative risk ratios, and we're comparing getting substance abuse treatment to getting no treatment, getting mental health treatment to getting no treatment, and getting both to getting none. And we also control for the K6 score, the Kessler 6 score. It's a very widely used measure of a depressive episode, and it sort of goes from 0 to 24. And we did sort of exclude individuals with AMI, but we sort of felt that, look, what if someone feels that they have some sort of mental health issues, and even though the NISDA cannot categorize it as AMI, they still might have a mental health problem, and they could still go and seek mental health treatment because of that. So we wanted to control for that, to sort of say that, look, even though we exclude individuals with AMI, we're also controlling for their K6 score. So we also account for the fact that this individual could be on probation or on parole, because as we know, many of these substance abuse treatment could be court-ordered, even though in the NISDA we cannot exactly identify whether the treatment that they're getting is court-ordered. We thought this is an interesting control variable to put in there. We also control for the fact that whether the individuals were arrested for driving under the influence, and we control for the standard demographic characteristics like age, gender, and federal poverty status, employment status, education, their self-rated physical health, all of that. So we sort of take the kitchen sink approach, throw everything in there, and then see what we get. So before we go to the multivariate estimates, I just want to show a couple of descriptive statistics. So these are pattern of treatment broken down by insurance categories. So we have sort of categorized insurance as whether an individual has private only, Medicaid only, others with veterans and TRICARE. So those are categorized as others, and uninsured. So in uninsured, we divide them into two populations. If they are below the 138% of the federal poverty level, and if they're above the 138% of the federal poverty level. So below 138% of the federal poverty level are usually individuals who would qualify for the Medicaid expansion provision of the ACA. And if you're above 138%, you sort of qualify for the private exchange to participate in the private exchanges. So if you're within 138 to 400%, you sort of get a subsidy. About 400%, you don't. But we said, all right, we don't want to get into too much into that. So anybody above 138, you qualify for private exchanges. So there you have it. Now, what we sort of see here is, very strikingly, almost across all insurance categories, a vast majority, and by vast, as you can see from the numbers, like almost 83%, to like 72%, individuals with SUD are not getting any treatment. So, which is sort of reinforces the fact that, you know, what we have already known. You know, substance use disorder rate is high in the population. Substance abuse treatment is not, and this sort of is uniform across insurance. So, almost every sort of insurance category that you find, you see 80% of the people not getting treatment. The lowest rate being Medicaid. So, 73% of them are not getting any treatment. And also, another interesting fact is that the highest percentage of treatment getting among the insured and over the overall population is mental health treatment. So these are the individuals with SUD, but no mental illness, but they're getting mental health treatment only. And I think so the rate of getting mental health treatment is lowest among the uninsured, highest among those with private and Medicaid. Substance abuse treatment, as expected, very low percentage of individuals with SUD are actually getting substance abuse treatment, and the rate is actually higher among the uninsured. Getting both, as expected, is very, very low. So, by the way, all of these estimates are weighted, so these are nationally representative. So these are patterns of treatment. So we look into perceived need by insurance status. So as we can see, overall, regardless of their insurance status, 97% of the individuals with SUD are saying that they do not feel a need for treatment. That means they do not feel that their substance use is a problem for which they need to seek help. And this is 97%. It is huge. And if you cut it across insurance category, we see the same exact story. Felt need for treatment, only like about 5% is probably the highest, which is in the other categories. But overall, vast majority of individuals with SUD are saying that they feel that they do not need treatment. So now, if they feel a need for treatment, what happens? What kind of treatment do they get? If they do not feel a need for treatment, what happens to them? Do they still get treatment? What sort of treatment? Because, you know, we know that, you know, some treatment could be court-ordered. Their family could sort of drag them in, you know, to some treatment center. So we wanted to take a look at it. And also, just by comparing the percentages, we can see even among those individuals who have felt a need for treatment, so that's that 3% of that population, among them 65% of them do not get a treatment. So they feel that they have a need for treatment, but they're not getting treatment. Now, so if they do get treatment, what treatment do they get? 21% of them get mental health treatment only. So once again, we sort of see that phenomenon that, you know, you have SUD but no AMI, you tend to get mental health treatment more. And if you felt that you do not need treatment, you know, 84% of them do not get any treatment as expected, but we see some percentage of them getting treatment. So, you know, if you have it something court-ordered or a family member taking them, unfortunately, in the NISDA data set, we cannot identify the reasons why individuals got substance abuse treatment. But even among them, we see that a vast majority, 10% of them, are getting mental health treatment. So we're almost sort of seeing our hypothesis. So we're sort of happy that our, even with our very, very conservative approach of getting rid of individuals with AMI, we're sort of still seeing our results. So the multivariate estimates, I apologize, the table is pretty busy, but if you sort of think about it, we are sort of looking into a couple of different categories, and we're interacting it whether the individual felt a need for treatment or they did not feel a need for treatment. So the reference categories here is that individual did not feel a need for treatment and they were uninsured. So compared to that, what do we see? So we see that most of the action takes place when the individual feels a need for treatment. So if you feel a need for treatment and if you have private insurance, if you feel a need for treatment and if you have Medicaid, you are more likely to go seek mental health treatment. And I'm sort of using the word more likely loosely here because these are not odds ratio, these are relative risk ratios, but the interpretation is almost the same. But you know, if you guys want to pounce on me saying that you're wrong, you know, we can sort of, I am open to that, but I think, you know, it's just easy to understand. We do not see anything much happening when individuals do not feel a need for treatment. We see some action, and here by one star, it's significant at the 5% level. We see that individual, even though they did not feel a need for treatment, but they had Medicaid, they're sort of more likely to go get both substance abuse and mental health treatment. And other than that, if they have other insurance but did not feel the need for treatment, they're less likely to get any treatment. So we do see some action, but most of the action happens when they feel a need for treatment. Now, interestingly, once again, the relative risk ratios are higher for mental health treatment only. So basically, it sort of confirms our descriptive story that if you feel a need for treatment and you have insurance, you're more likely to get a mental health treatment. We see some effect for private insurance, which is an odds ratio of around, relative risk ratio around 3, significant at the 5% level, but the greater effect is for the mental health for mental health treatment only. So overall, it sort of confirms what we have been observing in our descriptive statistics. So in conclusion, what do we see? We can sort of say that, you know, less than 20% of the individual with an SUD are reporting getting substance use treatment. A vast majority, 97% of them, are not seeking, they do not perceive a need for treatment. And we also sort of saw that, you know, decision to seek treatment is not only contingent on having insurance, but also on having a perceived need for it. So, you know, it sort of begs the question why that's the case. You know, individuals are getting, their perceived need is important, but they're sort of getting more mental health treatment. We're sort of thinking that, you know, maybe this is explained by the phenomenon of, you know, maybe they sort of feel that their substance use is sort of their coping mechanism for their mental health issues. So it's almost like a self-medication. So we haven't tested that hypothesis. I don't know if any paper has, but, we think that's a possibility. So what else? So, what I wanted to show here. So basically, I'm going to skip that slide, and I'll tell you why. So here, in terms of implications, ACA is great. All these legislative initiatives is awesome. They're giving people access to treatment, but more needs to be done, especially in terms of educating people on, you know, their need for getting treatment. So why don't you individual get treatment, even among those who feels a need for treatment? So if you sort of recall back to my slide about among those who felt a need for treatment, 65% of them did not get a treatment. So you have this substance abuse treatment gap, and it is substantial. And we're sort of thinking that, you know what, maybe this substance abuse treatment gap would also vary by type of insurance. And why? What are the reasons for them to not get treatment? Which sort of brings us to a little sneak peek of what we are doing. We're actually looking into reasons why individuals do not get substance abuse treatment. We're in the process of completing the paper, so this is a first sneak peek into it. Hopefully in the next year's APHA we'll get to present this. But overall, what we see is that individuals across insurance categories, there is variations. But overall, they're saying their lack of readiness to stop using the substance is the number one reason why they're not getting substance abuse treatment. So these are individuals who have a substance use disorder, and they have perceived the need for treatment, and why are they not getting treatment? Number one is lack of readiness. Treatment not being perceived as helpful means, you know, they feel that they could recover on their own. They don't have time for treatment. Those are also important. Stigma is important. Issues of treatment access is important. Treatment access meaning, you know, the facility don't have the program that they needed. They did not have the transportation to go seek that treatment. The insurance did not cover that particular treatment. Those are important. Financial factors, are important. They don't have insurance. Insurance is not covered. Too expensive. All of these are important, but they are more important for the uninsured. So for those who have insurance, it's the more of their stigma, lack of readiness, and treatment not being perceived as helpful as the primary category. So, you know, I hope to share the results with you guys.